Welcome back to the program. Friday, last Friday that we will be with you before Christmas, because obviously we won't be with you next Friday. David Sears is back with me on this Friday as we are past football season, but we're about to start the postseason. That begins tomorrow. Some interesting games on this weekend, but none of great consequence. But still, it's football, and it's college, so it's worth watching it. 1 o'clock Central Time, you have the Gildan New Mexico Bowl between Temple and Wyoming. At 4:30, you have the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, which I think probably has the best name of any bowl. That's Ohio versus Utah State. And then finally, tomorrow night at 8, San Diego State, Louisiana Lafayette in the New Orleans Bowl. And I will tell you, Sears, I've been told that Louisiana Lafayette, which I think is now just referred to as the University of Louisiana, has sold 18,000 tickets to the Superdome in New Orleans. So take that, Alabama and LSU.
Well, that's merely because it's their first bowl in the history of their program. So I'm pretty sure that if 18,000 tickets came available for Alabama or LSU, they would be snatched up in maybe 2 minutes.
You think so?
And I think that's going a little high with 2 minutes. They would cause a huge stampede if they gave out 18,000 tickets at the national championship.
Oh, I know. Are you going to get...
There'd be so many deaths there. Actually, yes, I do have tickets to the game, so I'm excited. I get to go make the trip.
David Sears.
Got off the Monday and Tuesday from work, so be coming back hopefully for a victory for the Crimson Tide.
Are you not concerned at all about being trampled by LSU fans?
Not at all. I'm okay. Big. I will be the wall that stands.
That's true. I would
stand firm.
I wouldn't. If you got in an altercation, my money would be on you. That's for sure. How about we have Gus Malzahn here? He takes the job at Arkansas State. Everybody probably knows by now. Well, today it has been reported in several papers, including the Arkansas Times, that he is standing by his woman. Well, I'm literally reading the headline. Gus Malzahn stands by his woman. He says that the YouTube video was edited to cast his wife in an unfavorable light that was manipulative and very unfortunate. He went on to say, I've got one of the best coaches' wives ever. I would not be in the situation that I'm in right now without her. He could say that again.
That's a fact.
And she's been a great coach's wife, he went on to say. Anyway, come on. It was manipulated, and it was very unfortunate. It was edited in an unfavorable light. I don't think they needed to really edit it to put it in an unfavorable light, Sears.
She was able to pretty much hang herself with their own rope. So that was – I've seen that video. I've seen the full video. I've watched both just to make sure there wasn't anything that they tried any tricks. And, wow, the full video is even worse.
Yeah,
to me.
It is.
So it's rough. It's very candid. And I think that she – had there been the big jobs opening – up last year and this video came out, I think he would have still ended up at an Arkansas State type job.
Really?
Because it's not very good to have a wife spill the beans about what goes on behind the scenes. And,
so I was going to ask you if you thought it really cost him, and you think it did.
I think it did. I also think the fact that he didn't have Cam Newton this year and a very experienced offensive line hurt him. I think the fact that he wasn't able to ever really get a rhythm after the first half of the Clemson game hurt him. That offense just up through Clemson, the first half of the Clemson game, it had a lot of rhythm, was hitting on all cylinders, and then after that, something happened. I don't know if it was supposedly the Chizik saying, slow it down where you're wearing out our defense, or if it was they hit a wall. I think it's a combination of the two, but I think it was definitely a problem of the offense not being able to keep up the pace that they had established earlier in the year, and it looked like Chizik was trying to take the reins of the offense a little bit.
Okay, Sears, you've been a pretty decent critic of Gene Chizik since he's been at Auburn the last couple of years, as we've talked. So I want to get your opinion here. You got a vacancy on the defensive side with Ted Roof going to take the same position, defensive coordinator at Central Florida. You have, of course, Gus Malzahn leaving to go to Jonesboro, Arkansas to become the head coach of the Red Wolves. So you have no coordinators. If you're Gene Chizik, how much is he invested into these next two hires?
He is very invested in these next two coordinators. Last time Auburn lost their two coordinators, they followed it up with a very bad season, and the head coach was fired. I believe that happened with...
Well, Tupperville fired a coordinator every year.
Well, it's true, but the year they lost both coordinators in 08, got a new defensive coordinator, a new offensive coordinator, they tanked pretty badly. But he is very, very heavily tied to these. I know you've got the Mark Stoops from Florida State is the rumor to take over for defense. They didn't exactly look that great this year. Florida State did not live up to the hype. And then offense, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens because if you're going to stick to this spread, you're going from the guru of this offense to someone that's going to run an imitation of it, or are you just going to abandon that and run a pro-style offense and try to use the offense that people consider a real offense in college football? I mean, it's going to be something he's going to have to decide, and it's going to be hard for him if he does decide to switch, because that means the offensive linemen will have to gain weight, become a bigger offensive line. That means that a lot of the quarterbacks they have right now would have to learn a new system. Kyle Frazier was recruited to run a spread option, not a pro style. I think Clint Mosley was also recruited to run a spread option, not a pro style. So it'll be a very interesting transition if they go that way. If they try to do a gradual transition to it, I think that would probably be their best bet. But what do I know? I'm just an analyst.
Well, I agree with you, though. I think they. I mean, I don't see why Auburn is not running a conventional offense. The only time a spread has worked in the Southeastern Conference is, of course, when Urban Meyer had Tim Tebow at Florida, and he does a pretty good job of running it. And then, of course, when Malzahn had Cam Newton last year. Guess what? I don't see any Tim Tebows, and I don't see any Cam Newtons left right now in the SEC. So a spread has typically, historically, not worked in the Southeastern Conference. Now, you can argue that Dan Mullen has had a little bit of success at Mississippi State, but I would say that, okay, he's never beaten anybody but Ole Miss from the West. So typically spread offenses do not work in the Southeastern Conference.
I agree with you with that. It takes a dynamic player to run the offense. Now, we've got a potential dynamic player coming out of Hueytown, but still, that's a true freshman that would be inserted in there.
Yeah.
Sam had 2 years of JUCO in
there. Right.
Tebow had the learning experience of 06, and then he had the hard look of 07, and then he became a dominant player in 08 and 09. So it's not like these players will react and just grow into Tim Tebow and Cam Newton overnight. They still took a couple of years to get to where they needed to be. I think this is a huge, huge point for Chizik. A lot of people said he caught lightning in a bottle in 2010, that he just got a great player and a system that worked really well. The defense didn't really have to win many games for him. They played a lot of bend but don't break. And now after, I think, 3 years, they finally just got fed up with him. Because I don't believe anybody was ever happy with that defense. I believe all the fans complained about Ted Roof the entire time he was there.
Hey, they did. Well, speaking of Tim Tebow, I think we would be remiss as a talk show if we didn't do what every other talk show and media outlet in America was doing and spend several minutes on the dynamic quarterback of the Denver Broncos. 7-1 now, Sears. He's led his comeback after comeback. I think he's up to 5 now, fourth quarter comeback victories that he has orchestrated with his team. Yeah, the Miami Dolphins, Oakland Raiders, New York Jets, San Diego Chargers, and Minnesota Vikings are all the victims of being Tebowed, as some people are saying. Just what do you make out of all this?
I think he is a very good quarterback. I think he has potential to be a great quarterback. There's a great article on Yahoo Sports today talking about how, yes, religion is a big part of his world, and yes, he's very devout, but God doesn't open up those holes for him. He doesn't see all the great opportunities. He's a very big fiend in the film room, studies a very, very large amount of time before practice and after practice. They comment on his knowledge of the game, how he was able to basically go in to several meetings at the NFL draft and tell them the type of offenses they ran with the verbiage. So he's a very smart player. He has very high football IQ, so he's able to do things that way. And he has a lot of raw talent.
Yeah, he does.
His footwork has gotten better. He's making crisper throws. He's able to do really well with the situations. Now, part of the problem, of course, is they are playing prevent defense, which is a lot easier to throw on a prevent defense than it is on a real defense. And we'll see if teams, if they get a big lead again, will go to prevent or if they'll stick with their normal defense. But I think he's reading defenses a little better. He's able to hit some pretty difficult throws. I think in the long run, he's going to be a big, big play for Denver. I think that was a really, in hindsight, will be a great move for him. And Jacksonville will be kicking themselves for many, many years.
Especially I think you're
when they
right.
When they become the L.A. Jaguars.
Well, they need to do something. That last night was embarrassing. I mean, I think the final score was 41-7. And I know
they got a late blocked punt. It was 41-14.
Okay. Well, I went to bed before then. I was too busy watching Rick Perry talk about how he's going to be the Texas governor. Rick Perry talk about. And now back to Tebow for just a second. This is a big, I think, a huge matchup this weekend. You have the Tebow Broncos against the Brady Patriots. Is it in Mile High or in Foxborough?
It's at Mile High.
Okay.
It's in Vesco Field at Mile High, or Mile High Stadium within Vesco Field. But I think it's going to be a huge thing for Tebow because the Patriots' defense has not been that well against the pass. But they're 13th against the run. They're 31st or 32nd against the pass.
Yeah, last in the league.
Only team worse against the pass. Only team worse against the pass for my Packers. But
But your Packers they're not flailing in many statistics.
Okay. Yeah. But I think this will be a big opportunity for Tebow to show that he can throw the ball really well. The defense of the Broncos has been able to keep a lot of the games close, so Tebow will be able to have his big comeback. So I think that defense will give Brady a lot of trouble, and I think Tebow will give the Patriots defense a lot of trouble, and I think the Patriots will end up going down to the Broncos, and Tebow mania will sweep the nation even more so.
So
I work on a news talk station,
right?
And one of the prominent stories we've talked about this week has been Tim Tebow, because everybody loves to hear about Tim Tebow. We had Greg Doyle on from CBS, Sports.com, and Greg's like, you know what? I'm not going to fight anymore. I'm just going to embrace it for what it is. It's an amazing story, and I'm just going to go along for the ride. When it ends, but, I mean, how can you count this guy out? It's just really hard to not pull for the guy, not like the guy. It's not like he's a jerk. He's very polite. He's very well-mannered, and he practices what he preaches. So, I mean, it's really hard in this day and age when you have all these athletes that, like Stevie Johnson, blame God for making him drop a ball, or they tend to, I believe some people look at it more as a superstition than an actual devotion to the Christian faith, and these people that treat it as a superstition just give it a bad name, and then you have someone that comes along that's really devout the way Tim Tebow is, and it's just absolutely amazing, and it's hard not to like the guy. I know there are some people that will never like him because they think he's been forced down our throats ever since he's arrived at the national spotlight in 2006. But I've always liked Tebow. I really wish he would have came to the University of Alabama.
I
don't think he would have. I don't think he would have been as big a success though, because he would have been stuck with Mike Shula, and I think he would have piddled along in mediocrity under Shula because he was just not a good coach.
I mean, Moore would have given Shula a contract extension just for signing the kid.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But Tim Tebow is a heck of an athlete, a heck of a player, and I think that in the long run, he will go down as a great quarterback. I don't know if he'll go down as the greatest quarterback. I don't know if he'll ever throw for 5,000 yards in a season the way that we're seeing possibly four quarterbacks do it this year. But I think he's a good enough leader of men, and he's good enough motivator that he'll be able to help in the long run that Broncos organization get back to the levels that Elway had him to, and maybe take him to a Super Bowl. In fact, I tweet my weekly tweet after the Packers.
Yes, no, every week
the Packers win. I say, you know what? I love my Packers ride, but I can see it right now. 18-1, we're losing to Tebow in the Super Bowl. So
it's amazing, and you've been saying that for a couple weeks.
I'm telling you, Tebow's going to take him to the Super Bowl and cost the Packers a perfect season because there's just something special about Tebow this year.
What a storyline that would be. The game this weekend, if you want to see it, should be on your local CBS station at 3:15, Patriots at Broncos, in what I'm sure will be a largely viewed NFL Sunday afternoon. How about this story coming out of Washington yesterday? Proponents of a college football playoff are not launching a new campaign aimed at taking down the BCS. Now, obviously, there have been many, many efforts by organizing bills and propositions and everything you can imagine. Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah has been involved in this, and the outcry is even greater this year after some people believe Oklahoma State or Stanford were snubbed from the BCS when, I don't know why, because Alabama and LSU are clearly the best two teams. But we just continue to see more and more surrounding a potential playoff, even though I know Bill Hancock is out there saying everything is A-OK in BCSville. What do you say, Sears? Do you see a playoff, and if so, how soon?
I don't think we'll see a playoff per se. I think they're going to try to stay away from that name. But I really think that we're going to get closer to a plus-one model where one plays four and two plays three in a bowl. Dan Wetzel did a really good piece on it on Yahoo Sports where it's basically two plays three at a 1:05 kickoff in, like, the Sugar Bowl. The Rose Bowl has their traditional late afternoon kickoff because everybody wants them to keep their spot, and then the primetime game will be like a Fiesta or Orange where the 1 versus 4 plays, and then a week later the winners of those games play in whatever bowl didn't get to go on. So it's going to be there eventually. I definitely see that coming.
It's hard not to.
I think Slide is already forward thinking in it. He proposed it, was it 07 or 08? He proposed it, and the ACC was with him originally, and then everybody backed out except for him. And he's just like, you know what? We're going to get in trouble if y'all don't do this. You really need to agree to this. And basically right now you've got everybody but Notre Dame, the Big Ten, and I think even the Pac-12 now is come along on it.
Everybody is on board except Jim Delaney.
So you got Jim Delaney and Notre Dame. So,
and my response to that is this. Jim Delaney, now why in the world would he have a reason to be against this? I don't know. Maybe look at the top four standings this year with two SEC teams, a Big 12 team, and a Pac-12 team. Look at the top four last year with two Pac-12 teams, an at-large team, TCU, and an SEC team in Auburn. So maybe it's because his teams don't ever make it to the top four to begin with, so he wouldn't want the embarrassment of having to be left out every year.
That's part of the problem. I also think that Delaney and the Big Ten are just, they're basically like the people that don't want to get on the internet and use email. It's something that has become entrenched. It's part of our lives now. You have to do it.
That's Bobby Bowden.
The proliferance of money in NCAA football, the proliferance of TV coverage, talking heads, and like every market has at least two sports talk stations now.
Absolutely.
And college football has become such a specialized brand. I mean, the Rivals websites, the scout.com, ESPN U150, everybody tracks college football 365 now, from recruiting season to off-season conditioning to spring football to summer football, then media days, then the season, then bowl season, and then right back. You cannot get away from college football.
No, you're
right. College Football Live on ESPN airs all the way from second half of July.
It sure does.
Through spring training. It takes a break in May and June and comes back in July. I mean, college football is just everywhere. ESPNU will dedicate an entire day on the first Wednesday of February. They'll do nothing but recruiting signings, and they'll just show everybody. So you've got this huge marketability. Why would you not want to make more money? Why would you not want to have a huge bowl? Why not bid it out to various places? Well, better yet, why don't you say, hey, Jerry Jones, you have the biggest stadium in North America. Can we host a national championship game there? I'm pretty sure everyone would go to Dallas, Texas.
Absolutely.
Every year for the second Monday of January to see a national championship game. And it's going to happen whether Jim Delaney likes it or not.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to basically just either get with it, or the Big Ten cannot be a part of it. And you know what? I'm pretty sure that Kirk Ferentz and Urban Meyer and Brady Hoke will say, you know what, Jim, you're hurting us recruiting, because if they're pretty much guaranteed to not play for a national championship, no one cares about playing in the Rose Bowl anymore. They want to play for a national title. So he's going to hurt his league, and he's going to be dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st century.
I agree. I don't see what's holding it up, but I know there are things that are, but I do think, though, this particular year may not have been the best year to use as an example, because LSU would have been severely punished by a plus-one system by having to play an extra game when they obviously, by far and away, deserve to be there in the national championship game, don't you think?
Well, I think they would have to make a stipulation where all conferences would have to have a championship game. I think they would have to make that a stipulation if they go to a plus-one. And I think they'd have to be more open with the BCS polls. They'd have to tell the formulas. Either they'd have to tell the formulas or they'd have to go to the selection committee. They'd have to do something very open and have something that sits down before the media and explains why Team S got in while Team D didn't. So they'll have to do something along those lines where they'll have a very open selection process, because right now the computers are weighted towards the Big 12 for some reason. Every year the Big 12, the front runner of the Big 12 has a huge advantage over everybody else unless it's an SEC team that's undefeated. And they're going to have to be more open with the process like they are with the NCAA selection committee for the baseball tournament and for the basketball tournament. So they'll have to do something along those lines. But other than that, this playoff's going to happen. I really feel that Fly will champion it, and I think we're also going to get the $2,000 stipend and all these small schools that say, we can't afford it. Well, so I will say, guess what? It's a privilege, not a right, to play Division I college football.
That's right. That's exactly right.
We'll see.
Absolutely. Great stuff, Sears, as always. Really good discussion, and I think this is one that will continue about college football postseason, because I do think it will be changing and changing soon. But we will talk again in 2 weeks. Sears, have a great Christmas.
All right, well, thank you very much, and Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
Yeah,
I'll look forward to talking to you on the 30th, man.
We will be back at the beginning of the week next week, but as you know, it'll be a short week, so we will see you then. Everyone, have a great weekend.